prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of film genres.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Aaron, and joining us over the world of Skype is Ethan. Say hello, sir.
Yes, this is one of those times where I'm joining via Skype, but we have an in-studio guest, so...
I think this is the only time that's happened.
I think so, yes.
But our in-studio guest is Jeremy again. Actually, the way that it's going to fall is he's actually going to be two shows in a row, because we tried to do a podcast last week on sequels, but there was massive meltdown, and it didn't end up happening. It sucked. It pissed me off. And Jeremy's, I'm having trouble locating, but I'm sure it's around here somewhere. I'll find it, and I'll get it edited. But tonight, Jeremy decided that he had so much fun, he wanted to join us again, and we're going to be doing his recommendation tonight with thriller movies. So this should be fun. There's some damn good movies. Good.
Jeremy decided he was a glutton for punishment and wanted to come back on the show.
Yeah. Absolutely. So this is my sequel.
This is his sequel. But before we get into any of that, we have a little segment that we like to call Geekly Happenings, news relevant to us geeks. Ethan, what's happening in the world?
Well, obviously the big thing was today Dick Clark died.
He did. 82 years old.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention it because I don't have it actually written down yet. So.
Yeah.
But he was in some pretty bad shape health-wise. So,
Yeah.
It was kind of sad to see him the last couple of years at the New Year's Eve stuff.
Yeah, he looked like a lich.
Yes.
He was not looking healthy, but it's funny. I saw it and I was reading a little bit about it, and I was surprised that he was only 82. Mm-hmm. I thought he was older than that.
Me too.
So rest in peace.
Yep.
Word on the interwebs is he was a dickhole, but I don't care. I mean, he did some good things he's an icon,
mm-hmm.
and I never had to deal with him personally, so I don't have a problem with him personally. So I guess rest in peace, Dick Clark.
Yeah.
I used to go to this restaurant in Kansas City.
Yeah, the American Bandstand. That's not bad.
I used to go there and get the California burger.
It's now a parking lot, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah, because it was next to the Casey Masterpiece.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yep.
Well, on the opposite side of the death spectrum, we have a pretty nifty birthday today.
What's that?
I don't know the age, but David Tennant's birthday is today.
Awesome.
Doctor Who himself.
He's like 1,000 years old or something.
Yeah, something like that. I think he's in his late 30s. I'd have to look it up, but I don't care that much. And I don't want the computer to blow up on us again, so I'm not going to touch it if I can avoid it.
Probably wise.
Yeah. You know. Right, what else?
One of the things that we've got here is Disney resurrecting various things from the dead. Disney has obviously been really successful with those Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and they're looking for a new franchise or something to the ride-based theme park ride movies that they want to do, and they're working on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, which is interesting because that ride is gone now.
Well,
at least it is in Disney World. It might still be in Disneyland.
I haven't been to either, so I can't say.
Yeah,
cool. I don't care.
In other words, obviously, it's based on The Wind in the Willows, which they had a cartoon of many, 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 many years ago. But this time they're looking to bring it back with to the screen. It's a feature film that combines live action and CG by commercial and video director Pete Gandeland. So, I guess we'll see what happens there.
Could be great, could suck, who knows? I mean, I like the book.
Yeah.
I wrote the ride, so...
I don't think I've looked at the book since probably elementary school or junior high. Mm-hmm. Vince Vaughn is going to star in an adaptation of The Rockford Files.
I saw that.
Yeah, Universal Pictures has hired David Levien and Brian Koppelman to write The Rockford Files, a big screen adaptation of the NBC series from the 70s that starred James Garner. I hope that he has a cameo. I always, James Garner's a fun guy.
Well, he's pretty fucking old, isn't he?
He is, but he's still kicking.
What was it? The Notebook is the last thing he did, maybe?
Jeez.
Maybe.
Well, I would guess.
Hopefully he does something else, because that would not be a good one to go out on.
No, that was... the studio developed the project as a vehicle for Vince Vaughn. Vaughn and Victoria Vaughn will also produce through their Wild West Picture Show Productions. So we'll see if they decide to take that in a Starsky and Hutch direction.
That movie was what it was.
Yeah. I mean, but a lot of original fans of the show really hated it because it really just turned it into a big joke. So
yeah,
but you know, I've never seen the Rockford Files. I've heard good things about it. My mother
watched a little bit about it. You know, it's just, you know, it's your typical
70s cop
70s cop yeah. show. I mean,
yeah,
it's all right.
My mom was a big fan. So
oh, there you go.
I mean, I'm expecting now we're gonna get Ironsides and Kojak and, you know, all that. We're getting
Manimal.
Kojak the Night Stalker. Yeah, Manimal.
Knight Rider.
Knight Rider would be good, but the Knight Rider's in the 80s, so they need to push it. Although we've already gotten
Manimal's
the A-Team.
In the
so,
80s, too.
Yeah. BJ and the Bear.
BJ and the Bear.
They tried the Mod Squad years ago, and that was
awful. Yeah, they already did that. That didn't work out too well.
No, not good at all.
Good luck to them. I hope it's awesome.
Yeah. Iron Man 3 signed a deal, is going to be co-produced and partly filmed. I can't tell if it's wholly filmed or partly filmed in China, which
cool.
is kind of interesting. It's Walt Disney China and DMG Entertainment announced that Iron Man 3 will be co-produced in China. It'll take place in late summer, filming will. I think this...
Produced in...
Produced in China. They're going to film stuff in there, in China.
Well, that leads to some Mandarin action, doesn't it?
Yeah, obviously, you know, with them talking to Ben Kingsley and them saying, no, he's not the Mandarin. Oh, is he signed now? All right. With them doing the whole Ben Kingsley thing, saying, no, he's not the Mandarin, and but we're going to go film in China. That's obviously if they're trying to hide the fact they're doing the Mandarin, they're not doing a good job. But they made Survivors, and it might be someone else. Who knows? I mean, it could be...
They might, you know, Ben Kingsley very well just might be some dude, and they get Chow Yun-Fat or whoever to be the...
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be more inspired casting
well,
than that.
Well, there was another villain in Iron Man called the Radioactive Man, and he was Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they could be going that route, but... and Chow Yun-Fat as him would be pretty cool, but, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Ben Kingsley is an Asian.
That's true. But he did play an Indian fairly well. He got, you know, an Oscar.
Well,
for
he's
it.
An Indian.
Oh, well,
so imagine that he played an he's an Indian born in Britain.
Ah, okay.
So yeah, well, cool.
I like
Black. I like Iron Man 1 and 2. Yeah, I like Ben Kingsley. So yeah.
I said, it would be nice to see Ben Kingsley playing a bad guy in a movie that doesn't suck. So
hopefully it doesn't.
But
suck.
No, this one's gonna be. It's kind of interesting. They're gonna be filming it in China. So you know.
Have you been seeing any of the early reviews for the Avengers, Ethan?
No, I've been staying away.
No, you have?
Yes.
Well, without giving too much away, because you want to stay away, they're positive.
Cool.
But the big thing the thing that's kind of got me, that's taken my attention out of it, is there's actually been talk of an Oscar nomination for Ruffalo.
Okay.
Now, personally, I think that's a load of horse shit.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's probably some Marvel people that, you know, that paid somebody to say that to try to get rid of some of that backlash against Ruffalo, but I'm sure he'll be fine.
Yeah, or it's someone at Marvel basically, hey, you know, we should say this on Twitter. It'd be funny.
Well, or that could be, too. You know, I will say this, though. Like, I've read 3 or 4 early reviews of it, and Ruffalo has come up as a positive in all of them.
Cool.
So, the good.
Well, I'm going to be seeing it midnight showing, so I'm going to the Marvel Marathon on Thursday, the May 3rd.
You're a better man than I, because I wouldn't do that. I could not do that. And it's got nothing to do with how long it would take. I just own them all, so it seems silly to me.
Sure. So, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun.
It'll be an experience.
Exactly. And you know, I get to see the Avengers right quick.
Yeah, that'll be good.
This has finally been announced. Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller are going to begin production on Sin City, A Dame to Kill For this summer. Filmmakers Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller, along with producer Alexander Rodiansky, have announced that production will commence on the highly anticipated sequel to 2005 Sin City, entitled Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
That's a big fan of Sin City.
The film will be produced by AR Films and Quick Draw Productions, financed through AR Films US, and released domestically by Dimension Films. The script and details of the film story have been kept tightly under wraps, obviously. Casting will begin next week, with many of the original cast members expected to return.
casting will begin next week.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means. Are they going to start announcing the cast next week? Are they going to start making phone calls next week?
Don't know. It just says casting starts next week, so we'll see. Miller was going to write some original stuff for it, and then it was also going to be based on Dane to Kill For.
That'd be awesome, though, if he writes some original stuff for it, and then he goes in and, you know, does some of the original stuff, it'll be fun to see the good Frank Miller and the crazy Frank Miller. You know, there'll be a nice duality going on screen there.
That's true.
So, yeah, I really liked Sin City. Kind of wish it would have come up in our comic book show, but I don't think it did.
It did not.
It's a good one, but cool.
We've talked a little bit about the legal wrangling that's going on between Warner Brothers and the Siegel and Schuster estate, for Superman. Apparently, Warner Brothers has won a pretty heavy fight about the attorney Mark Toberoff. I think last time you mentioned they were basically moving to get some documents that he had that they had been made aware of, because essentially how it boils down is Toberoff was not only acting as an attorney for the Siegel estate, but also as sort of a business partner, like he's taking part of the proceeds and stuff like that. And because of that, some of the documents he has...
Toberoff is
the attorney for the Siegel estate.
And he's the guy that's stirring up all the bullshit, right?
Yes.
Or, excuse me, allegedly.
Yes.
I mean, he's the guy that all the comic book people hate because they think that all this bullshit is because of him.
Yes.
Okay.
Toberoff, who was representing Siegel's estate and serving as a business partner, a somewhat shady move, apparently, and the opinion, essentially, the court opinion agreed that he's sort of out of line. Toberoff was trying to claim attorney-client privilege, and now he has to release these documents to Warner Brothers, and it's a fairly big victory. They get to basically show that this guy is coming after them for money and without huge legal claim. So we'll see what happens. It's just an interesting development.
Well, it's an interesting development, but it's going to add years this now.
This whole thing's going to take a decade to. I mean,
it's already been going on
for 20 years. Yeah.
Longer than that. Didn't it start right before the original Superman?
It did sort of start in the 70s, yes, so about 30 years. But it's really picked up steam in the last 10 years with Toberoff getting involved.
Kind of attached to this, I don't know if you had this or anything, but did you see that the original check for that Siegel and Schuster received from DC was auctioned off on...
I did, yes.
What was it, $138,000 it sold for, and I think it was a $400 check or something like that?
Oh, it was less than that. Well, the check was less than that.
It wasn't very much.
No, oh God, no. And the last thing I spotted today was Myers Media, a newly formed international sales company. Myers Media Group announced today that they have picked up all international rights to director Zebediah DeSoto's Night of the Living Dead Origins 3D from Simon West Productions. Simon West, director of The Expendables 2, amongst other things, will produce alongside Jib Palhemus, who did The Mechanic, which was not a good movie. Gus, who has a horrible last name I'm not even going to try, and Maddie Mango Miranda. Written by DeSoto, David Rubin Schwartz, and Warren Davis, the film is a motion capture reimagining of the George A. Romero zombie classic that stars Danielle Harris from Halloween 5, Tom Sizemore from Saving Private Ryan.
Wasn't she Topanga? Danielle Harris? Wasn't she Topanga in Boy Meets World?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I never watched Boy Meets World. And Tony Todd from Candyman.
He was on The Rock, which I watched last night.
Nice. Yeah. He's the big black guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, because he was also in the remake Night of the Living Dead. So this will be the second remake of Night of the Living Dead he's been in. Odd. In the film, apparently, though, New York lies in ruin when zombies have overtaken the city. For the few people left alive, there is only one dream, survival. That includes Ben, Tony Todd. So he's playing Ben again. That's interesting.
Ben died!
Yeah, in the remake, but this is another reimagining. That's really kind of weird, you know, that he's playing the same character again. Huh. Anyway, Ben and Barbara, two survivors who find themselves trapped and fighting to escape the hordes of undead that walk the streets, shot completely in a CG environment using stereoscopic 3D, the film employs the next generation facial capture technology that is a step beyond any previous versions used for this type of film. The look is a marriage between the graphic novel and modern animation, making it a true, quote, graphic film that younger audiences will be more accustomed to experiencing. So it's going to be a mocap animated film, which means obviously the Academy will hate it.
Mm-hmm. I hate everything though. So.
So
yeah, I'm not seeing. I'm looking at Danielle Harris's filmography, and I don't see that show.
Yeah. So. And you're right. That Superman check was for $420 and sold for $160,000.
Yeah, that's right. $420. I remember there was some of that whole pot thing.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
She was also Danielle Harris was also the daughter in the Last Boy Scout.
Oh God! You know? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I just brought in a little piece of, I don't want to call it news because it's something that's becoming maybe we'll just call my new segment on the news called, Get Off My Lawn, shit that makes me feel old. But what was it, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before, you and your fiancée Beth went and saw Titanic 3D, right?
Yes, we did.
Yes, you did. Now, did you know that the Titanic was real?
Yes.
Yes. Oh,
of course.
As it turns out...
This year is the 100th anniversary of its sinking, so...
Yeah, it's the 100th anniversary of its sinking. And I have a news story. This is on dailymail.co.uk.interwebs, I guess.
Sure.
But basically says that as the world commemorates this, the centenary of the Titanic sinking, thousands of people have taken to the internet to discuss the historic anniversary. But the event has evidently proven more educational for some than others. A number of Twitters have used the microblogging site to confess that they were unaware that the Titanic was a real ship.
Oh, God.
The ill-informed citizens sparked an online backlash, with hundreds sharing their disgust with the apparent ignorance. Some of the tweets include, "Is it bad that I didn't know the Titanic was real? ? Always thought it was just a film. Or, just found out the Titanic was real. #WTF. Nobody told me the Titanic was real. How am I just finding this out? What, WTF? Never knew the Titanic was real. Just thought it was another movie." And then there's another one. "Guys, the Titanic was real. #MindBlown. And I never knew the Titanic actually happened." It did. Yes, RMS Titanic sunk in the early hours of April 15th, 1912, after being struck by an iceberg. If you've seen the movie, you know all this. But for a younger generation, the ship is more familiar because of Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio. And it seems that several fans of the movies failed to grasp it was based on a true story, albeit with invented characters.
Oh, God.
Future of our country.
Yes, the future of our countries, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, can we get off my lawn? Holy
shit. Oh, my
shit.
God. Wow.
To be fair, we were 19 or whatever when this movie came out, 1920.
Yeah.
I was very fucking aware of the Titanic before that.
Yeah.
I was aware of the Titanic when I was in grade school.
Yeah,
you know?
So was I. I don't remember. I'm sure it was mentioned in some history class at some point, for crying out loud.
Wow!
No child left. Hey, no child left behind. Remember?
All child left behind. My thing about it is, it's a movie, right?
Uh-huh.
It was for 15 years, the most successful movie of all time,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
Meaning lots of people saw it, right?
Yes.
White people look beyond it. When I'm interested in something, I find out stuff about it. You know? I mean.
Yeah. Before you get on Twitter, why don't you try putting it in?
Well, I mean, It happens all the goddamn time that I'll watch a movie. That movie was good. I type it into, you know, IMDb or Wikipedia or whatever, and I'll say, oh, wow, this is based off of a book, or this is based off of a, you know, historical event, and it isn't something as fucking culturally significant as the Titanic.
To be the devil's advocate, granted, in 1998 when this movie came out, I think it was 98, there was no, you know, Twitter or Wikipedia, but it still, you could... It would have been insanely easy to find info on it.
I swear on my life that I knew the Titanic was real before the movie came out.
Well, yeah, so did I.
Anything you have, I just don't get it. I mean, No Child Left Behind, but isn't that just mind-blowing, guys?
Yeah.
Jesus, God, get off my lawn, I'm old.
Wow.
No one ever explained anything to me growing up. No one said, hey, this is cool, study this, and I still knew that.
Well, you know, it's... You know, Chloe's six, and, you know, I obviously can't be all like, yeah, hundreds of thousands of people fucking died, well, hundreds of people died, but, you know, we'll watch something, and, you know, it'll come up, yeah, this really happened, like, what were we watching? I don't know, but, well, I know that we were watching Pocahontas,
mm-hmm.
and I explained to her that really happened, that, you know, I mean, obviously, I didn't go into the, well, actually, you know, Pocahontas is like your age, and John Smith is like my age, and he did horrible things to her little body.
Yeah,
I didn't go that far.
That they were riding the Indians like horses.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I didn't go there, but I did go out of my way and say, this really did happen, and you're going to learn about it in school, and Jesus.
At least we hope. Maybe. We hope you'll learn about it in school. Yeah.
But guys, you know, not only are we entertaining, but we are also educating. Yeah, Titanic was real.
Yes, the Titanic was real, and let's even throw it in there. You know, the Untouchables is based on a true story as well.
Yeah. It was.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? How was that, anyway, the Titanic?
The 3D? The 3D was okay. I mean, we saw it on IMAX. And so, really honestly, I didn't notice a lot of the 3D. The processing, I guess, was okay, but it sort of struck me, both Beth and I agreed, that it was nice to see it on the big screen. It was a really good transfer. It didn't need to be in 3D. I mean, it was just a waste of 3D-ing it, you know. So.
Well, Beth is like six, so how old was she when Titanic came out? She probably didn't see it.
She saw it in theaters. I believe she was 11 or 12 when it came out.
Okay. But yeah. Yeah, I definitely saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
I didn't make it to 3D.
I was working at theater when it was out, so.
Yeah. I know that Rachel and I went and saw that fucking awful movie I saw like a week ago. I recommended we see the Titanic, but we ended up seeing that instead.
I mean, Titanic is a good movie. You know, it's one of those that's popular to hate, and, you know, fuck you people, it's good, you know.
What was that movie I saw, Ethan, that I hated so much?
Your Highness.
No, the other one.
The
one I saw like a week ago.
I don't know what you saw a week ago.
That stupid horror movie.
Something House.
Silent House.
Silent House, yes.
Yeah, that movie blew.
Yeah, with the Ashley twins.
She's a good actress, but whatever the movie was just retarded.
So. Yeah, I'm gonna try to go see Lockout this week.
I do wanna see the Last House, or not Last House.
Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods.
I
wanna see that.
I would like to see that too.
I saw that Sunday.
Yeah, Bobby said everyone's saying it's really good, so we'll just have to see. I'll put on my movie snob hat.
I will see Lockout because of Guy Pearce. I mean, I haven't really watched
that's
the trailer
really
for it.
That really strikes me as a renter, but, you know.
Yeah.
Doug really liked it.
I'm going to need the distraction at some point this week, so.
Yeah, probably. Well, I guess that's going to bring us to an end of Geekly Happening. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our main discussion about thrillers. Discussion. We're going to be talking about thrillers. This is our guest choice, Jeremy Joseph. Is there any particular reason why you chose thrillers, Jeremy?
That was just the first thing that came to mind.
For me, you know, I said, okay, yeah, no problem, we can do thrillers. And then I got thinking about it, and it's not an easily defined genre. At least I didn't find it to be.
Yeah. It's one of those that sort of is in that gray area between genres, you know, where you could say this movie is an action movie, but it's also a thriller. So, you know, this movie is a suspenseful, scary movie, but it can also be a thriller. So you have like sci-fi thrillers and action thrillers and stuff like that.
Right.
But there are a few in there that like aren't quite what I'd consider action movies or aren't quite what I'd consider horror movies, you know. So those sort of it's that gray area between all genres that that I think thriller sort of encompasses, which means of course there's a bazillion movies that are
You look at a movie like Unforgiven is a western.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. But you can make an argument that it's a thriller.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it, and pretty much any well-made movie with any amount of suspense in it, there's that argument to it. So kind of what I had to do to make up my list is I had to go in and I just kind of had to define what I like out of a thriller. Because I went and I found, a list of all the, the thrillers out there. And then, I said, okay, this is what I like about those. And then, I made my definition, and then I got thinking about it, and I looked at my I went to my normal rigmarole of trying to find stuff. But basically what I found was, Ethan, you and I often talk about movies that that don't assume you're stupid. I mean, that's one of our big beefs. We don't like being treated like we're stupid. Well, I find that thrillers assume that they're smarter than you, but they want you to be smart, and they want to help you along the way.
Yeah.
So I find that they have
good ones do.
Yeah. Well, obviously the good ones, the ones that I'm going to be talking about, I feel are good ones. But I find that there's some sort of goal, some sort of plot established really early on, and kind of as the movie unfolds, the story unfolds, more characters come out, and other storylines develop off of there. It becomes a bigger story than just we need to go steal the bird or whatever.
Right.
So I mean, to me it's just an excellently crafted movie that does a really good job of building tension. I found tension was really important for me.
Yeah.
And some of the ones on my list, like, I don't have any of the, like, The Sixth Sense isn't on my list or something like that. But I think that could arguably be called a thriller. But I don't know. I just didn't find myself going for, like, the twists. But, some of those certainly are there. I just kind of like these are movies with strong screenplays, from my point of view, at least on my list. How'd you come up with yours, Ethan?
Well, I sort of sat down and started listing out things I consider thrillers. And then what I ended up with this huge list. And then I went back and I started pulling things out that were sort of cross-genre stuff. And so I really tried to thin it to the point where it was stuff that was I can really sit down and say, okay, that's a thriller, not an action movie. You know, it's got action elements or it's got these types of things in it, but I consider it a thriller. The other thing I did was I took out all Hitchcock movies.
You did?
Yeah, mainly because...
The master of the suspense thriller?
Yeah, because otherwise my list would probably be chock full of Hitchcock movies, and I'm like, I'm going to save that for the Hitchcock episode, know? And so instead of, having the Hitchcock greats on there, I mean, Hitchcock is awesome. He is probably, arguably the guy who created the thriller moniker, the thriller genre.
To be fair, he was your number one director.
Yeah, I mean, he's an amazing guy. So that's sort of my justification of removing his movies from the list. I was like, okay, those are Hitchcock movies or Hitchcock movies. Let me just focus on these. And so I ended up really just focusing on movies in the last 20 or 30 years.
Okay. I certainly didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, it's a very Ethan thing to do, it's the basically 80s on, 1980 on forward. I took a look at movies and started weeding them out as far as ones that were just, okay, that one is much more of an action movie than a thriller, quote-unquote, to me. So, it's that's basically how I attacked the list.
See, I'm looking at my list right now, and most of these, there's going to be the argument that you could put a lot of these into other genres,
sure.
Right? But I think that a lot of these are ones that I've often thought about. You know, some of these are some of my favorite movies ever, but they don't necessarily fit easily into another list. But they do fit comfortably for me into a list of thrillers.
Yeah, I agree, though. It's a highly subjective genre, and like I was saying with it being in the gray areas, you know, it's a lot of movies you can easily say this is a thriller, but it's also an action movie, it's also sci-fi, it's also horror, but it can be more thriller than other things, you know, and so I think, like I said, thriller is the packing peanuts that are dumped into the package of a movie, you know.
Nice analogy. Jeremy, how did you just wrote them down, or did you put any thought into it?
Basically, what I did to make this list was I wrote the first 10 that I thought of that I enjoyed, and then I went and looked at some lists to find 10 more that I have always enjoyed, and then I went through that list and picked ones that I enjoyed when I was probably too young to be watching them.
Oh, sure.
I got a major one in there that me and my stepfather watched many, many times, and ones that I just loved, ones that maybe one performance or one scene, ones that I found myself looking up a certain scene just to watch that here and there. And you said, there's so many that fall under what people consider thriller if you look up that. I was shocked at some of the ones I saw.
It's also one of those that it's one of those genres that you can look at and go, the movies that at least I was looking at were movies that I didn't expect to like.
Mm-hmm.
But then they ended up, I ended up enjoying them quite thoroughly, you know, that sort of thing. So, that's pretty much it for me. I mean that's thrillers to me.
Very good. Well, why don't we just get started? What's your number six, Ethan?
Well, my number six is one of those movies that sort of came out of nowhere. It came out in 1997 and was directed, gosh, I don't even have a director on it. Doesn't matter. But it's starring Kurt Russell and J.T. Walsh. It's Breakdown. Which is...
Was that his last movie?
Breakdown. With J.T. Walsh?
What is the... No, Pleasantville is J.T. Walsh's last movie.
Yeah.
I don't know this movie.
It's the one where Kurt Russell plays a guy and his wife are road tripping, and they go through the desert, and their car breaks down. His wife gets kidnapped, and he has to deal with these guys.
And it was Sandra Bullock?
No.
No, that's vanishing.
Okay.
Yes.
Kathleen
Quinlan
is
his wife. JT Walsh is the bad guy.
Okay.
And it's one of those movies that's, you know, I believe I can't remember what he had done what Russell had done right before this, but right after he went and did Soldier. And so I mean he trained for like ever to do that movie. So in this movie he's very much like a normal guy, you know. And it's one of those movies that comes out, you go and you watch it, and it's got a lot of people in it that you're like, oh, I recognize these guys. Is that guy in it? That guy's in it too, blah, blah, blah. And J.T. Walsh plays the villain, and there's a great moment at the end of the movie that is what I like to call sort of an ultimate fuck you ending, where this bad guy, who really hasn't been evil, per se, throughout the whole movie, he hasn't, you know, been... twirling the mustache and being horrible and whatnot. He's just a bad guy.
Ethan, it was directed by Jonathan Mostow.
Well, there you go. It's a good one. It's a good one. The thing I like about J.T. Walsh in it is he plays a bad guy, but he doesn't play. It's not this guy who's like full of evil completely. But you still hate him. And when he gets his comeuppance at the end of the whole movie, you're like, that fucker deserved it. But it's one of those more realistic style of action movies, because there's no like bullets flying around. It's a very realistic type of an atmosphere, type of violence going on, and it's very much that Hitchcock normal man thrown into an extraordinary situation type of thing. So
very good.
I should check it out.
I like Kurt Russell.
Yeah, that almost ended up on my list.
Yeah, it's one that immediately came to mind for me, and I was like, I got to put Breakdown on here.
Yeah, I was thinking about Kurt Russell the other day. I watched Tango and Cash,
mm-hmm.
and I really hope that Inglourious Basterds Django Unchained gives us a resurgence of Kurt Russell, because he is
awesome.
Fucking awesome. I love Kurt Russell.
He is great.
Just isn't, He's Kurt fucking Russell, for one thing.
Well, yeah.
But he's just, he's awesome, man. But, I kind of miss the Kurt Russell of this period. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and it stars Kurt Russell, J.T. Walsh, Kathleen Quinlan, M.C. Gainey, yep. Jack Noseworthy.
M.C. Gainey was in The Rock, which I watched yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so it's got a lot of those actors from a lot of character actors in there, you know, like obviously J.T. Walsh, M.C. Gainey.
J.T. Walsh is somebody I unfortunately didn't really discover until after he had died.
Yeah.
And because he was bad. He was a great actor. He's in fucking everything.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
He was in, Executive Decision with mm-hmm. Kurt Russell.
Yes, he is.
And he's just, you know, and Sling Blade,
Pleasant Bill. He's very much one of those guys you could say that's a character actor.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's no argument. That dude is a character actor.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. He is one of those guys that was in frickin' everything. You go back, you watch stuff like Pleasantville, Negotiator, Breakdown.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in tons of stuff.
He was a great smarmy character.
Oh, yeah.
This is what it sounds like I should check out because I like the cast. So.
It's really good.
I
really
like
Jonathan
Mostow, too. So
it's a good
maybe
one.
I'll check it out. Jeremy, what's your number six?
My number six is 1986's The Hitcher.
I thought about that one.
I'm not sure I've seen it. The Hitcher?
Rutger Hauer plays a psycho in
yes,
it.
Yes, that movie's raw. That movie's awesome. That yeah. movie's awesome. I like that movie.
Rutger Hauer makes that movie awesome.
Exactly. That's what I was... My main thing is his bad guy in that movie just... Anytime that I see a movie where there's a cookie cutter bad guy that just starts to eat at me, I go back and watch a little bit of that movie, and then I'm okay. You know,
see Thomas Howell, Jeffrey DeMunn,
yep.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yep.
Lee's in there. Yeah.
And Robert Harmon directed it. Nice.
It was remade in 2007 with Sean Bean, but I didn't see the remake.
I did not either.
And there was a sequel.
Yeah, a direct-to-video sequel, I remember, with Jake Busey.
Yeah, and see Thomas Howell. Returned as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else was he doing, really?
Sean Bean, Zachary Knighton. Huh. Yeah, this is a good movie. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a while, but yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's been a while for me.
Very good. And getting on to my number six, I want to get my silly one out of the way. Let me get this pulled up. The 1997 David Fincher film, The Game. That movie is, in my opinion, it's your prototypical thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's completely designed to say I'm smarter than you,
yeah.
which is really, really, really obnoxious sometimes. But I kind of liked it in The Game, other than the fact that it went a little bit too perfectly in
yeah.
the end. You know what I mean? You know, there was really no comeuppance for everything that they were doing, and there is some serious control of this guy's life going on. Rachel watched that, and she's all like, if you ever give me that for a birthday present, I'm going to divorce your ass. I said, if you can ever give me that for a birthday present, I will love it. That would be awesome. But
yeah, talk about alternate reality game, you know.
Yeah.
That's one of those movies. I'd actually thought about that, putting on the list, and it got bumped off. And it's one of those that, you know, it's one of those forgotten David Fincher movies.
Yeah.
People don't really remember this movie because he did it right after Seven.
And
right before Fight Club, so...
It's funny because it's a really, really David Fincher movie,
oh,
too.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, arguably more than Seven or Fight Club. I mean, those are obviously very stylistic movies, but, you know, you don't have, you know, your dark, disgusting backgrounds and stuff that you have in those movies in this one. You know, it's all there in the direction. It's all there in the screenplay, and I think of that as, you know, a very, you know, Fincher movie. Even though he didn't write the screenplay, I looked it up, but
mm-hmm.
it was I actually just watched this again last week, and it was a good one. I enjoyed it. It was a good one. So, you've seen it, Jeremy?
Yes, I have. Actually, I believe I have the VHS somewhere.
It's on Netflix.
I have not seen this movie probably since working at the video store.
Wow.
It's been a long, long time. But it's also got Sean Penn in it, doesn't it?
Yep. Sean Penn plays his
brother.
Yeah.
That's
it's
right.
Michael Douglas, Sean
That's right.
Penn. It's a good movie. I liked it. And hell, it probably had J.T. Walsh in it also.
Yeah, probably. God. He was in everything.
Pretty much. Before he died, he was. What's your number five, Ethan?
Okay, my number five sort of skirts into guilty pleasure type of movies. I think it's a movie that tried to be an action movie, but I don't think it quite made it. But I think it firmly establishes itself as quote-unquote thriller. It's the 1991 movie directed by Danielle Petrie Jr., Toy Soldiers.
I just fucking watched that last week.
I was going to say, I saw it.
I
watched
that the other day. Yeah, Will Wheaton.
With everybody. With Sean Astin, Will Wheaton, Andrew Dyvoff, Keith Coogan, Louis Gossett Jr., Denham Elliott, T.E. Russell, George Perez.
I think it was Saturday. Rachel and I couldn't sleep, so we stayed up all night watching Ethan movies. And this is one of the movies that came up, and she'd never heard of it. She'd never seen it. And I just remember thinking, I love the part where Will Wheaton gets shot. Fuck that guy. Yeah,
because that was during his Star Trek days. It was like, yeah. And this is one I didn't see in theaters, obviously. I didn't find this movie until years after it came out.
I did see this in theaters. This is one I got drugged to by my sisters.
So. Oh, okay. And I thoroughly, you know, it's a good one. It's Louis Gossett Jr. being Louis Gossett Jr. pretty much the part he always played. It's a totally unbelievable premise. I mean, it's Die Hard in a prep school, but
Red Dawn, but not with Russians.
Yes, you know. But
is that the bad guy, the Death Wish guy?
Yeah,
yes.
I've never heard his name.
Andrew Dobby.
Dyvoff.
Oh yeah, there you go. He was also in he was in two episodes of Highlander also.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's
another actor that's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. My favorite scene in that movie is when they fucking kill when they kill the dude's dad in jail, or is it his dad? When they slit his fucking throat and push him over the. I love that scene.
Isn't that Will Wheaton's dad?
Yeah, it's not Will Wheaton's
no.
dad. Well, that was Jerry Orbach. That played Will Wheaton's dad.
Yeah, Jerry Orbach is the guy who had it done.
Yeah, and it was Andrew Dobby's dad that got his throat slit and pushed over the thing.
Okay.
That guy's name is. But yeah. I love that scene. Because it's just like, you know, because it was cool. Because, you know, Will Wheaton got his ass killed. And, you know, you're thinking to yourself in the movie, okay, now we're not going to hear anything else about the mafia guy. And then, no, we get this fun little punctuation because of the mafia guy. And. Overall, it's a really fun movie. Yeah.
By far not. It's not one of those great movies of all time, but it is one of those. If it's on TV, you know, you'll watch it just because it's entertaining. So.
Yeah, I think we found it on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I wanted to throw it on there. It's one of those movies. It's got a. It's not a movie people generally like. 57% on Rotten Tomatoes, or 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. Excuse me, 57% from the from viewers.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty dismal, but I have a lot of fond memories of it, and it came to mind because it's not doesn't quite deliver as like an action movie, because it's not like that over the top. You know, we got badasses doing their thing. It's much more like Real Genius meets Die Hard. You know, so.
Yeah.
But that's my number five.
Good, Jeremy. What's your number five?
My number five is 91's Cape Fear, with De Niro, and. Juliette Lewis, which I believe, and Nick Nolte, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what time period was. Was that the Brad Pitt time period?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. But I've liked this movie. It's one that every time I see it, I keep it on and watch a little bit.
So, Scorsese, right?
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ethan probably hates it, right?
I don't think I've seen the remake of Cape Fear.
I love the original. Fucking, I'm an idiot. Why can't I remember his name? Help me. Mitchum, Robert Mitchum.
Yeah,
so
Mitchum.
Fucking awesome in that movie.
This is the only one I've seen. I've seen the original.
It's a good movie. It's a real good movie. I mean, that's one of those underappreciated De Niro performances, I felt. Max Cady, he was fucking creepy.
The way he's talking to her and seducing Lewis and just,
the scene in the theater when he's just in there just cackling like a moron, that one just always... That one, it just creeped me out for some reason.
Juliette
Lewis is super young, and
I love the scene where they find the house. I think it's the housekeeper dead in the kitchen.
Yeah,
all that blood everywhere, and Nick Nolte freaks out and slips in the blood. He's falling on it, trying to get up, all over him. It's a great scene.
It is.
That's my number five.
Scorsese can direct the fuck out of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ethan's not a fan of him, but. I like a lot of
still movies. Recognize he's a good director. He just doesn't do movies I like. So.
Well, see, it's funny, because like, some of my favorite movies that he's done, you haven't seen.
Yeah.
Like I would consider Cape Fear up there. I would consider The Color of Money up there. I would consider the original Kings of Comedy up there. But I do like Goodfellas and Casino and stuff like that. I mean, I've seen better crime movies, obviously. But, you know, in terms of Scorsese's filmography, I kind of like his stuff that he isn't as well known for.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. So it's a good one. Are we on to my number five?
Five. Yep.
I don't want to fuck with my computer. Maybe while I'm rattling on, you can look it up for me on Rotten Tomatoes. But it is the 2006 Christopher Nolan film, The Prestige. This is one of those movies that I've been hugely aware of. Hugely aware of the entire time that we've done our podcast. I mean, since day one, we started putting movies into lists. Mm-hmm. I was always like, I love The Prestige, but I didn't know where to fit.
That movie is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I didn't put it on my list. I was hoping someone else would bring it up. It's got a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, 90% user rating. So
90% user rating, huh?
Yeah, and 76% from the critics.
And for those kids out there that we were talking about in the news, what's his face? Help me out here. The dude that the Bowie played.
Tesla.
Tesla was a real guy.
Yeah.
He didn't make people duplicators.
No.
What he did do is he developed to direct current electricity and stuff that we use now. Mm-hmm. It's funny, everybody thinks of Edison as the electricity guy, but it was actually Tesla.
Yeah.
He's the one that we use most of it for. I mean, auxiliary current, we use that in cars and shit.
Alternating current.
We use it in
wall outlets too. That's what we get out of the wall. So.
No, that's direct current.
No, that's alternating current.
No, I'm sorry, you're right, excuse me. But okay. Tesla was an important guy in the terms of science. But he did not make Christian Bale duplicators.
No,
or Wolverine duplicators.
Yes. What I like about that movie is it's kind of subtle in the way it does things, and it is one of those that assumes you're not stupid. I mean, uh-huh. Christopher Nolan, that's sort of his thing. But what I like about it is all the way up through the end, you're just going, you're trying to figure out what's going on. You know, it's like, no, well, it can't be, you know, can't be duplicating people. It can't be that's really it. And it does it.
Are you talking that, or are you talking Christian Bale's reveal?
No, I'm talking the machine. What the machine does.
I want to say this. I'm not trying to sound better than anybody. I'm not trying to sound smart, but I knew what was going on with Christian Bale the first time I saw it.
Sure.
And you know why I knew that? Because Michael Caine said so.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
and
he was the guy that knew what was going on. He was mm-hmm. the guy that wasn't lost in his rage. He was the guy mm-hmm. that was being logical. And he says, I know how you can do it, but you would need a double. And I'm like, well, that's how he's doing it then.
Yeah. It's one of those movies that you don't watch the same way twice. I mean, you watch it through and then you see all this and you go back and you realize at the very beginning of the movie, Michael Caine is telling you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's telling you how to watch this movie right there. And then from that point on, you know what's going on.
And I caught on to that.
Yeah.
What was funny about it is I caught on to it early on.
Yeah.
Obviously Wolverine's too pissed off to think straight.
Yeah.
You can't trust Christian Bale. Why don't we listen to Michael Caine? And, you know, I'm like, okay, so there's a double. Must be a twin or some shit.
And then
I noticed his little partner. I'm like, that's Christian Bale.
Yeah. You know, it's a great movie. It's absolutely a great movie.
I will say this, though. It did surprise me that he had a person duplicator.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's what I'm saying is I was not expecting that, but when, you know, you're trying to figure out, it's like, okay, that can't be, it's got to be some sort of trick to this, but that's the movie taking you in right there, you know?
Yeah, well,
I love that movie.
It's Prestige. That's what's so cool about it. I mean, it's once again Christopher Nolan being a three-dimensional filmmaker.
Yeah, and it's based on a novel, apparently.
Yeah.
I hear the book's really good, too, so I haven't read it,
but I've heard good
I was unaware of that.
Yeah.
I do have that on my list right here of ones I hoped someone would mention.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. It is so good.
Yeah, so I love that movie. It's my number five.
It's one of those that you really enjoy showing to other people, you know?
No, Rachel doesn't like it.
Oh, see, I showed it to my mom, and she loves it, so...
Who did?
I showed it to my mom. She loves it now.
That's a great movie, yeah. Great movie. What's your number five, Ethan?
Four. My number four, I've mentioned on a previous show, but not really in any capacity as far as it's, you know, on a list, but it is another sort of older one, 1989, a movie directed by Andrew Davis. It's called The Package. It stars Gene Hackman, Joanna Cassidy, and Tommy Lee Jones.
Okay, yeah. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's Dennis Franz is also in it. You know, it's one that I was sort of exposed to actually fairly young. I think it was probably early 90s when I first ran into it. My dad showed it to me. It's not one that a lot of people like. 64% critic rating and 43% user rating. And it's a assassination plot, is what it is. And Tommy Lee Jones plays this assassin, plays this bad guy, but it's all about how Gene Hackman's character is basically trying to catch up to him to stop this assassination. And
John Hurd?
What's that?
John Hurd's in it.
John Hurd?
Yeah, Pam Grier, Dan Crawley.
Oh, yeah, Pam Grier, I'd forgotten about that.
Marco St. John.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fun to look at these movies that are getting up there in age. Like, holy shit, that has everybody in it.
Yeah.
I find that happen a lot.
It's a good one, and it's one a lot of people don't know about. And it's one I firmly have always had a lot of affection for.
I found it in one of my Gene Hackman kicks.
Yeah, it's good. It's a really good one. It has some great... it's firmly what I would say is a thriller, because it's not an action movie. It's very much a political, assassination thriller type of thing. And it's Tommy Lee Jones being very subtle in it. He's not, chewing up scenery or anything like that. He's being good like he always is.
The Fugitive last week. Damn, he ate some scenery in that movie. He was badass in that movie.
He was. He got an Oscar for it.
What?
He got an Oscar for that one.
Yeah, he did.
Did he? I did not know that.
Yeah, he screwed out Leonardo DiCaprio for What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I'll never forget that.
Yep.
You know, I thought Tommy Lee Jones was awesome in that. Mm-hmm. I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was better.
So yeah, definitely, if anyone listening hasn't seen this movie, check it out. The package, it's on DVD, it's great.
Very good. What's your number four, Jeremy?
My number four is L.A. Confidential from
1997. Fucking love that movie.
I fucking love that movie.
You go down the list with Pierce and Crowe and James Cromwell, Danny DeVito, Kevin Spacey. I mean, the movie is just
awesome.
I was unaware of this one for a long time.
I was one of the people kicking and screaming and yelling and pissed off Oscar night when Titanic beat it for Best Picture.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie. And Titanic's great.
Oh, yeah.
L.A. Confidential's better. Yeah. Sorry.
One of the backers almost said no to Pierce and Crowe because they weren't well-known in North America at that time.
Yeah.
So they almost did not make the movie, and I just couldn't imagine it if that was the case.
But, strikes me something that could happen.
I think that movie is one of those... That movie is one of those perfect storms. It's just got so much great things in it. Beautiful direction, beautiful art direction.
It's one of the last really great movies that have been made.
It is. Up until, obviously, 2007, 2007, it was easily one of the best movies in the last decade type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that movie in theaters and was absolutely blown away by it. I love that movie.
I think it came up in our noir show, right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite noirs because it crosses so many genres.
Movies.
Great. Yeah. I mean, any chance for me to talk about L.A. Confidential, I'll hop back because it's a fucking awesome movie.
Can't remember the name of the guy that directed it.
Curtis Hanson.
There you go. Yeah, Curtis Hanson. This is one of my favorite. There's so much to love about that movie. It's one of my favorite Danny DeVito performances. Because I loved his voiceover in it. I'm the hush-hush and the QT.
Yeah.
Guy Pearce was a fucking force in nature in that movie.
And a lot of times he's a pretty unsung hero of that movie. A lot of people don't talk about him in that, and he's so good.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is people talked about Russell Crowe because they didn't particularly know him when that movie came out. Now everybody fucking
knows And a lot of people talk about Kim Basinger, who's good in it. She won an Oscar for it, but...
She deserved the Oscar. And she was probably the least good performance in that movie, but she did deserve that Oscar.
I mean,
James Cromwell.
James Cromwell was fucking fantastic.
Yeah. What did we just see? We just saw him in something the other day, and I said something to Rachel about it, and she didn't know he was in Babe.
Yeah. He's another actor that's been in everything.
One of those Ethan movies I watched, I'm sure. But.
Yes. Well, he's another one of those actors who's been in everything.
Yeah, I love James
Gerald's Cromwell. Daughter, all those movies.
Yeah, yeah. iRobot. Yeah. he's awesome. Spider-Man 3, yeah. I love James Cromwell. He's great. And being a bad guy in that's just so good. I love that movie. Love it.
Okay, for my number four, going off of Ethan's choice last time, it just seems, fortuitous. I'm going to go with the 1993 Wolfgang Peterson film, In the Line of Fire. Fucking awesome movie.
That's another one I thought about putting on my list. That is so good.
John Malkovich.
Oh my god.
That was... He He was so good.
I have to say, I have not watched that. Oh, I am quite aware of it, but I have not watched that.
Mm-hmm. John Malkovich, I want to say he was Oscar nominated for it.
Yes, he was. He was. He was.
Yeah. Rene Russo.
That was one of those years that just sucked because it was him and. I think that was the year Fugitive came out, too. So, Leonardo. I mean, it was a lot of... It sucked, because it was like, wow, some good performances that year.
Who was it that played his partner that got killed?
Was
it Dave Duchovny?
No, Dylan McDermott.
There you go, Dylan McDermott. I mean, that was a good death scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just nice and in your face.
Yeah.
That's one of those movies that a lot of assholes on crack.com like to... attack because of the plastic gun that wouldn't work, but fuck that shit. It was just a fun presidential assassination movie, but because it wasn't JFK, it wasn't Lincoln, it wasn't McKinley, it wasn't Garfield, you don't know what's going to happen, and there is a strong possibility that this guy could die.
Don't forget Rene Russo is in that.
I brought her up. She was awesome in it.
And it's got a 95% rating by critics, 72% from users. So I like it. It's good.
If we did an underrated Clint Eastwood movie, it would be near the top of my list.
Oh yeah,
love this movie. And it's funny, Wolfgang Peterson's done a lot of damn good movies, and I'm just now recognizing it. But he did a lot of damn good movies, years ago, and he kind of shit on himself with Troy and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I love this movie, and this is another one that I've been distinctly aware of, and I just didn't have anywhere to put it. So it's my number four.
Cool.
Moving on to your number three.
My number three still sort of sticking in the same late 80s, early 90s. It is the 1992 film directed by Phil Alden Robinson called Sneakers. Starring everybody and their dog. Robert Redford, Sidney Poitier, Ben Kingsley, Dan Aykroyd, Mary McDonnell, River Phoenix, David Strathairn, Timothy Busfield, George Hearn, Eddie Jones... Darth Vader himself was at the end, James Earl Jones, this movie sort of gets a mixed bag, 81% from critics, 76% from users, and it's a techno thriller. It's kind of one of those that you can go back and watch, and it is kind of amusing, but it's not, painfully bad to watch like you're watching The Net, as far as computers are, because it was the early 90s. It's early 90s, it's like, okay, that's fine. And you have such a great ensemble cast with Strathairn and Redford and Aykroyd.
Strathairn went to Barnum and Bailey's Greatest Show on Earth Clown College.
I did not know that, but that wouldn't surprise me, as he's an amazing actor. So
yeah, he could pretty much do anything. Gillette, and I didn't know that. He was talking about it on his podcast. I didn't know that.
He's great. He's great.
I love that movie he did. Good Night, Good Luck. Such a good movie.
Yeah, it got an Oscar nomination for it, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And so did Clooney, so did the movie. Mm-hmm. Overall, great movie.
He's definitely one of those character actors that's just amazing. He was in the last Bourne movie, I believe, and I think he's in the new one, too. It's a great movie. Sneakers, we were just talking about Ben Kingsley and good villain roles, and this is definitely a good villain role, one of those forgotten movies of the early 90s that people don't really think of, but when you sort of sit down and make them watch it, you go, hey, that was actually pretty good.
That was an awesome movie, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a thriller. It's obviously not an action movie. It's not a serious drama or anything like that. But, just the cast alone in this movie is worth watching.
Oh, sure. It's a great one.
Amazing one. Love it.
Jeremy, number three.
My number three is 1990 State of Grace. With Sean Penn, Gary Oldman, John Turturro, John C. Reilly. Oldman's thug, low-level thug in that, always doing the wrong thing. Everybody's got... I don't know. It's been one of those, simple movie, but I think there's just something right under the surface where everybody's really tense, and I don't know. I've always loved it, and seeing Ed Harris as the head boss and whatever mob it's supposed to be, every time I see History of Violence, I think of this movie. Because he pretty much plays the same character, but maybe 10, 20 years later, after this, what would happen to that character, And I just always enjoyed that movie. That's one of those that I always keep on when I see.
Yeah, that's Once again, that's a great undersung performance by Oldman.
Mm-hmm. Which movie is it?
State of Grace.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen that one.
It's a good one. I mean, a Gary Oldman lover should love it. It's a real good one. Really good one. We're on to my number three?
Yes.
Son of a bitch, I don't even know what it is. Why don't we go... Yeah, there we go. I have it marked down for number three, so we're going to go with it. It's a 1996 Gregory Hoblit film, Primal Fear. I like Primal Fear
Hoblit
a lot.
Hoblit directed that? Really?
What?
Hoblit directed that?
Yeah.
Holy crap, okay.
Yep,
no
Gregory
idea.
Hoblit directed it. I like that movie. Obviously, it was Edward Norton's first of two Oscar nominations. One of the reasons why that movie worked as well as it did was Edward Norton was effectively an unknown at that time.
Yeah.
You didn't know how good of an actor he was. You didn't know anything about this fucking guy. You didn't see him in Fight Club or Everyone Says I Love You or any of that shit before. We can see just like what a powerhouse performance this thing is, mm-hmm. and then you go, and I'm sure this is completely unintentional, and I don't want to give Hoblit credit for this if he did this on purpose, because Richard Gere, you know, he's a good actor. I'm not going to say he isn't a good actor, but he is one of those egos that does not like to be outshined. And when I saw this movie when it came out, and it was, you know, I was thinking, okay, this is a, you know, it would almost fall into a court procedural a little bit more than a thriller, but it doesn't. Because of the fact that it's established early on what's going on, because things are unfolding the way that it does, and you're just like, and you're watching this, and you're thinking, wow, this is a, you know, it's a fascinating study on the deterioration of the human mind, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you have that wonderful reveal at the end where he was just fucking playing us all, and it just works so well because Edward Norton was, you know, he was
so good in that, yeah.
He was so good in it, and he was very deserving. Starting that Oscar nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that was 94? That might have been the other one that went along with Malkovich. You know, Malkovich and Tommy Lee Jones, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Edward Norton. I mean, this is a rough year, so. It's a really good movie. I like it. This is one that I showed Rachel, and she thought she was so goddamn smart because she had it figured out that he had split personality disorder, like, 20 minutes into it, and then, you know, she was blowing off her fucking feet at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love it when that kind of stuff happens. But, yeah, it's a good movie. I recommend anybody who hasn't seen it to see it. And maybe I was a little spoiler-heavy there, but they've had time to see it.
I've always enjoyed this movie.
Yeah,
that movie. Was the first time I saw Edward Norton was this movie.
Oh, it was his first big release.
And I even have the book on my shelf at home, so.
Yeah, it's one I have not seen movie. That. I have not seen that movie in so long. It's on Netflix.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it is. Watch it, Ethan, again when you have time, because it's a really good performance by Norton, and I know you're going to say, I know that, but watch it again, because there's a lot of subtle stuff going on there. It's one of those movies that, you know, it isn't as fun to watch for a second time like The Prestige or you know, Sixth Sense or something like that, but there's definitely that rewatch factor in there, because you can see how good of an actor Norton is the second time through.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff in there that you can see where, you know, decisions as an actor instead of, you know, it was in the script. It was cool. It was good. And I think that his performance is what makes it fit on my list so well. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's good movie. It's my number three.
It's a fantastic one. I haven't seen it in so long, unfortunately. Love it.
All right, moving on to your number two.
All right, my number two. Looks like we're going sort of on a Christopher Nolan kick. So I'm talking his big one that he first got noticed for is... I'm talking Christopher Nolan's 2000 movie, Memento.
Good movie.
That's on my list. I hope you guys mentioned as well. Good choice.
Yes, and it's obviously the first time I remember noticing Christopher Nolan.
It was the second movie.
Yeah, and it's so amazing. It's such a great one. It's obviously not perfect film, but it's obviously showed that Nolan was definitely someone who could direct a movie. And, of course, it has Guy Pearce, Carrie-Anne Moss, Joe Pantoliano, 92% critic rating, 93% user rating, so people generally like it.
Had Mark Boone Jr. in it, too, if I remember right.
Yeah.
The guy that played what was his name, Stice in Batman Begins, and he was in other stuff. So.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
No, and it's what I think. You could easily say this is a crime film, but I'd say it's easily into that thriller category.
I'm sure this has come up on one of my lists before because I do remember talking it before.
It's a great film, but the fact that it goes sort of in reverse chronological order, it's just such a unique movie. It's so refreshing to see this when it first came out, and it was one of those that I remember hearing about when it came out, but I didn't see it till it hit DVD. And it's, you know, obviously Guy Pearce, sort of coming off of his success with LA Confidential, this movie came in and just kicked all kinds of butt.
Where was the General's Daughter in chronology there? Was that before or after this?
Because
I remember Guy Pearce really well from that.
I want to say it was right before. I think it was. I think that one was in '99. Yeah, General's Daughter was 1999.
Okay, because I remember that as a follow up to LA Confidential, and thinking it was, you know, it was a good performance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, we're really not talking about. We're talking about Guy Pearce, but I don't know why. Whenever I think of, I think it's weird. Whenever I think of the General's Daughter, I should think Travolta or Hutton, but I automatically think him, Guy Pearce, for some reason.
It's a good one. You know, I pretty much there isn't a Nolan movie that I don't like. Insomnia is probably the one that I like the least, but. This one definitely was the first time I remember knowing who this guy was.
I would say that Insomnia is the one I like the least of Nolan's filmography, but I would say that Memento is probably second least for me.
And I think that's
showing you the strength of his filmography.
Yeah, saying that this is one of his weaker films is saying something. I mean, because it's a good movie, and you know, it's just showing that even when this guy's at his weakest, he's telling a goddamn good story.
I think you should, if you haven't seen it yet, you should check out Following. That was his first film.
His first? I have not seen that one.
It's on Netflix, at least it was.
Okay.
Actually, I meant to put it on my list, and I flat out forgot about it. Either that or I kicked it off for The Prestige. I don't remember. But it's a good one. In some ways, it's kind of like Memento. I mean, don't get me wrong, Memento's not a remake or anything, mm-hmm. but it's one of those movies that's told out of chronological order for the betterment of the movie. And, you know, it's less polished. It's more of a hungry filmmaker. But it's a really good movie. You should definitely check it out.
I will.
It's a good one. All right, moving on to Jeremy's number two.
Number two. This is the one that I spoke of watching many times when I probably shouldn't have, mostly because of the voyeurism in it and the scene where Antonio Banderas' current wife gets screwed up against the wall. But it's 1984's Body Double.
That's a damn good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Brian De Palma.
Ethan does not like De Palma, right?
He's hit and miss. I mean, I like Mission Impossible, and I like The Untouchables.
You go from Mission Impossible? I mean, there's nothing wrong with Mission Impossible, but that's a weird pull for De Palma, but okay.
I just, I don't know.
Body Double's a fucking intense movie.
It has been a long, long time since I've seen it. I was not aware of De Palma and his, you know, that it was even him until maybe a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my dad, you know, who I've watched it so many times. But just the fact that he's got that phobia, you know, kind of reminds me a little bit of Vertigo as far as, like, how he, whatever. And then, of course, him spying on the woman, rear window style. You know, I don't know. It was just a weird movie to me. And, of course, being that young, I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Sure.
But seeing it a few years later, that was, that's one of my favorite as far as thrillers. That is my number two.
Did we miss my number three?
No.
Yeah. You said you had it marked. You actually.
What was
it?
Crickets. Crickets. Crickets.
Well, whatever. Because I have. Did we talk about? Am I on my number three?
Yeah. No. Number two.
I do not remember talking my number three at all.
Well, what was?
It must have been. Yeah, it had to have been. In the line of, no, that was, see, my number, see, Glorious Radio. My number six was The Game. My number five was Prestige. My number four was, In the Line of Fire. My number, was my number three Collateral?
No.
It was Primal Fear.
It was Primal Fear.
Yeah. Okay.
Thor. Yeah. Okay, there we go. Okay. Sorry, where were we?
I believe we're at number two.
We are my number two. Okay. I Need a Hallelujah. We got 1975 Steven Spielberg film with Jaws. I've been wanting to get this on a list for a long time, and I don't have a better answer than Thriller. Maybe it's not the smoothest fit out there, but it's a pretty fucking thrilling movie when it comes down to it. I mean, obviously you can put it in action. I mean, horror's a little bit of a... I mean, you got that, but once again, you have your plot established early. There's a shark killing people, stop it. But when it turns out to be a 25-footer, things change. It's a wonderful film. It's one of those movies that fucking snobs like to bring up about the reason why people shouldn't use CGI. And I understand their argument, but I disagree with it. Because, obviously, you know, we've talked the hell out of Jaws before in the past. But, you know, the big thing about Jaws is the fact that Steven Spielberg had a notoriously hard time getting the mechanical shark to work. So he had to shoot around it. He had to make it a scary thing, just with not seeing it. So that big reveal with the shark jumping up, you know, mid-tempo in the song when they were throwing the chum in the water to just, you know, be that much more amazing. And I love this movie, and I think Ethan likes it. Mm-hmm. So
I love Jaws. Jaws is a great fucking movie.
Great fucking movie, yeah.
Yeah, and the DVD has an awesome documentary on it.
The Shark Still Working or the other one?
The other one. There's another one I haven't seen, and I think that's the
Shark
is Still Working.
Is one of the best documentaries on a movie I've ever seen in my life. It's so fucking good.
Yes.
So fucking good. Alrighty. I guess that's going to bring us down to our number one most favorite thrillers of all time. Ethan, what's your number one?
Alright, this one is an oldie but a goodie. Now, as far as an oldie, I seem to just be stuck in the early 90s, late 80s. It is the 1990 film Hunt for Red October, directed by, obviously, John McTiernan, with Sean Connery, Alec Baldwin, Scott Glenn, James Earl Jones, Sam Neill, everyone and their dog again, based on the Tom Clancy novel. This movie kicks so much ass. I mean, I remember seeing this in the theaters and just being like, this is awesome. Of course, I was 10. But I saw it anyway. And, you know, Sean Connery with who's playing the Scottish accented, Russian, captain of a submarine. And of course, you know, at 10 years old, you really don't know what's going on per se, but you go back and watch it now and there's even more to it because the movie's got some great exciting stuff going on with the subs fighting each other. And I remember, after seeing this movie, I had a model, like a Red October model, like model kit that I had. I built the Red October and stuff like that. And it's such a fun, great movie. Obviously not a hard-in-the-wool action film. It's definitely a smart one with everyone and their dog in it again. Hunt for Red October, great film. I assume you guys have seen that one.
Oh, of course.
Yes,
I saw it in the theater as well. And then once again, you know, I was, you know, 10 or 11 or whatever when I saw it.
It's awesome. It's the best Jack Ryan movie.
Of course it's the best Jack Ryan movie.
Nothing against Patriot Games is good, but I just loved this one.
No, this is a fucking fantastic movie. And my thing about it is Jack Ryan was cool in it, but I was all about Sean Connery.
Well, fuck yeah.
It was also one of the first movies I remember Tim Curry from, believe it or not.
Yep, as the doctor, yeah.
That's a funny thing.
Wait, wasn't he going on about his recreational vehicle in that one? Or what was it?
That was Sam Neill.
Excuse me, Sam Neill. But yeah. Tim Curry I liked in that one as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fucking great movie. Yeah,
it's a great movie. I haven't seen it in a while, but I saw the shit out of it when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I had it on tape. I had it. I saw it in the theater. It's a good one. It's a good one.
I remember,
have you seen it?
Oh, yes. I've seen it. It's a good movie.
I remember hearing stories about it when it came out. And I don't think they've ever really done it justice on a DVD or a Blu-ray release, but they went to the U.S. military, the U.S. Navy, and so they could see submarine and whatnot. And they built a submarine they built a submarine a deck on it, like a bridge, a submarine bridge on it, on a mm-hmm. soundstage, and they brought in their military consultants or whatnot, and they said, "You guys have to change some of this because it's too close to what it really is." And wow. so they had to come in and like move things around and actually change things because it was too perfect. And I think that sort of was an interesting little piece of trivia for that movie.
Very good, very good. All right, Jeremy, what's your number one?
All right, my number one is 95's Seven.
Still haven't seen it.
The reason is I saw this in the theater, and to this day it's still my favorite theater experience mm-hmm. for the simple fact that I didn't know anything about it. I hadn't heard about it, hadn't read about it. Someone just said, "You want to go to a movie?" I said, "Sure." So I had no idea what I was in for. What can I say? Morgan fucking Freeman, Brad Pitt. First time I've ever seen Kevin Spacey, you know. Mm-hmm. Even though he wasn't on the screen long, I mean, good Lord. It was just like...
When did that come out?
95.
When was Usual Suspects?
95.
Same year, huh?
Yeah.
That's a hell of a year for Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
I realize that.
I did not see... and, of course, Fincher. I was completely unaware. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. The guy that directed Alien 3, motherfucker.
Yep.
So, that is my number one for a lot of reasons. A whole lot of reasons.
That's a great movie. This is one that I saw... This is another one I saw with my sisters, and it was one of those ones that embarrassed me, because they were crying like fucking little girls at the end of that movie, because... Well, and they were little girls, but... the big reveal at the end of, you know, oh, he killed his wife. Oh, Brad Pitt's ruined. And, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, they took away from it was, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, he probably won't go to jail, but he's never going to be a cop again and blah, 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 blah. And all that stuff is true. I mean, it is something you can take out of that movie. But to me, that movie was so thematic. It was, you know, it was all about the set pieces. It was all about the just... I mean, it was such a nihilistic movie. I mean, it was dark, it was depressing, it was fucking vicious, too.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, I had
now,
a DVD
Ethan,
set.
You haven't seen this, or is that somebody else?
No, I have not seen this one.
You should.
I want to see it at some point, but it's like, they took it off of Netflix again, so.
That's a good one.
There's
a fantastic DVD of it, too.
Yeah, and it's...
The only one I had that had a storyboard, you know, of a different ending. You know, that's all they had. So they showed it, you know, kind of like a cartoon where, you know, Morgan Freeman knew what was going to happen and he knew what the point was. And he walks over and shoots Kevin Spacey in the
face. Yeah, but that loses it.
Yeah. So it's good that they did not
do
that.
It does and it doesn't, because it's a difference of one or the other sacrificing themselves. And the movie is almost too set up. For Morgan, and you know, we're ruining it. I mean, Ethan, do you know how this movie ends?
It's with Gwyneth Paltrow's head in the box.
Yeah.
Okay, I apologize, I didn't even think of that.
I've
known that for quite a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, like the whole point of the movie. I mean, well, it's not the whole point of the movie, but you know, the movie is, it's 3 days to retirement. You know, Morgan Freeman is just about ready to retire from the police.
Jaded,
and doesn't give a fuck about anything. And, you know, Brad Pitt comes in, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to kick ass and take some names. And, you know, Morgan Freeman is very, you know, he's taken by this kid, but at the same time he doesn't want him to be crushed because he knows mm-hmm. it's a crushing world out there. And the whole movie is him, you know, is trying to put Brad Pitt in a place to where he can comfortably retire and not know that he's fucking this kid over. And so instead, if Morgan Freeman had gone over and shot him in the head, then he would have been the one that was ruined, and it would kind of take away from the meaning of the movie for me.
Instead, it's
Brad Pitt that, you know, is ruined, that's never going to be a cop again, so Morgan Freeman is unable to retire, and, you know, it's this ongoing cycle of, you know, David Fincher.
Well, David Fincher being
not
such
a... scene in it or anything, but there was a certain scene between Morgan and... in a cafe between him and Gwyneth Paltrow.
And she tells him he's pregnant.
And she's pregnant. Where he talks about the baby they almost had, that him and whoever he was with almost had. And that part where he says, whatever, with the baby, and she starts to cry. I always think that if I was in a dirty grease ball cafe like that, and I was having a scene like that with Morgan Freeman, I would start crying as well.
Yeah.
It was like, no way.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, it's Morgan fucking Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason we invented that. It's Morgan fucking Freeman and all of his Morgan fucking Freeman.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, because she tells him that she's pregnant and asks what he should do, and he tells a story about, you know, his wife at the time, and she got pregnant, and they decided that she should have an abortion. And he says in that way that only Morgan fucking Freeman can say, he says that that there is no doubt in his mind that he made the right decision, but not a day has passed by where he wished he didn't make it, and it just crushes you.
It says that she decides to go ahead and do what she's thinking about. Don't ever tell him.
Yeah, don't ever tell him. And it's and you know, that's another thing, because he also tells, she was begging for the life of her unborn baby. And so, you know, this, like, this thing that's so fucked up is made just that much more fucked up because
Kevin
of this guy.
Kevin Spacey's like, he didn't know.
I mean, he ruins him. I mean, it's something else, Ethan. You should check it out.
Fantastic.
I want to see it. It's
a good one.
Gotta wait for the opportunity.
If you can find that 2 or 3 disc DVD set,
mm-hmm.
even if it's $15-$20, it's a fucking great DVD. You know how good Venture DVDs are.
Yeah, well, it's one of those Vista series, I think.
Yeah, it was really
good.
Really good.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's one that Rachel and I have been wanting to watch recently. So it's cool. A good choice. Good choice. Down to my number one. My number one is one that I did. It's one of the. It's kind of been a theme. I didn't realize it until I've actually started talking about it. But it's another one of those movies that I fucking adore that I just haven't been able to put on any of these lists because it didn't fit that well. And, you know, this movie could fit in action. It could fit in war. It could fit in all kinds of them. But I think the one that it fits in best is Thrillers. It is the 2009 Quentin Tarantino film Inglorious Bastards. I love this movie.
That's a great fucking movie.
I fucking love that movie. it's funny because I love Quentin Tarantino. He's one of my favorite directors. You know, I kind of teeter between him and Nolan as being my favorite working director, but I'm up there with Tarantino. And it's funny that if there's a Tarantino movie that I possibly like more than Pulp Fiction, this is it. You know, but, you know, Pulp Fiction is always going to have a soft spot in my heart. You know, as I told many times on the show before, it's the movie that got me into movies. So, I mean, I got to give it that. But this movie is fucking filmmaking at its best. And this is a movie with a master filmmaker. I mean, people love talking shit on Tarantino now. Why? I don't know. Probably because they suck. They get off my lawn. But my thing about them is... Well, my thing about this movie is, once again, it's established early on what's going on. You know, there's this group. They're going to go kill Nazis. They find out they have an opportunity to kill Hitler. Okay, so obviously we've seen Valkyrie. We went to school. We know that the Titanic sunk. It was real. We know that Hitler ended up committing suicide in the bunker, and you know, never really had to pay for his justice. So, you know, you're watching this movie. It's unfolding in such a way that where you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And then compound it with the fact that it's a remake of a movie. They horribly killed it.
You're watching it, and you're sort of in that mode of watching movies from, you know, World War II movies. And, well, they obviously can't kill Hitler, so we know they're going to fail.
Yeah, but you know, it's Tarantino. He's a good filmmaker, and then he kills fucking Hitler.
Yeah. And I love that moment. It's that Tarantino's going, ah, fuck it, I'm just going to kill Hitler.
It's he does not get enough credit for that.
Yeah.
I mean, he completely played the audience against itself.
Uh-huh.
He played the history against you. He took fact against you, and he says, well, you know, this is a fucking movie. You know, I'm not going to make any, you know, bold claims about this. You know, I can make Schindler's List or whatever, and it can make you feel bad about it, but at the end of the day, you know, this is a real thing in history, but wouldn't it be cool if it happened like this instead?
Yeah.
And compound it with, it's probably my favorite Brad Pitt performance ever. And what's his face? Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz, yeah.
Won an Oscar, very deservedly so in that
movie.
Oh,
yeah.
It was, I think it was the first time I remember seeing old Magneto. Not McAvoy.
Fassbender.
Tell me here.
Fassbender.
Here you go, Michael Fassbender. I think it's the first time I remember him. There was a strange, small, but good dramatic performance by Mike Myers, of all people.
Yeah.
Rod Steiger coming out of retirement to play Churchill. There's just so much cool shit going on in this movie, and I love it. It's one of those movies that I have been very, very, very aware of all this time I've been making these lists, but it doesn't fit into action. It might have come up when we did war films. I don't remember. Actually, we didn't do war films. What am I talking about?
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
Yeah. It was way back.
I thought we did, I thought it was crime and gangster movies.
No, we've done a war. I remember doing a war one.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we did, because my number one was The Best Years of Our Lives. But at any rate...
I'm really sad to say that I have only seen that once, and I was in a very distracted state. You know, I did not... I do realize what you say about Pitt, and the first thing I thought was he let him go, you know, and that's one thing about Tarantino I've always liked, you know...
He let him go?
Roth, like, let him be...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it reminds you of the old Brad Pitt, you know, the 12 Monkeys, 7, you know, some of the things we're talking about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. California.
That's what makes it. California, exactly. You know, get! Just fantastic stuff.
And, you know, I mean, is there
I need to watch that.
Is there a funnier moment in that movie than Bongiorno?
Yes. I almost fell out of my chair when I was watching that movie when he did that. That was so funny.
And it's... I like this movie probably a lot more than I morally should. But I don't care, because it's just so much fun to watch. And I actually walked away from this movie not knowing what I thought about it. I mean, I saw it in the theater, and I'm all like, I really like that, but it doesn't seem like I should. And then it occurred to me maybe 20 minutes later, like, no, fuck that. I was watching a movie.
Yeah.
And good on him for what he did, because I wasn't expecting that.
No.
I mean, imagine if Valkyrie ended with, you know, the Ninja Turtles coming in and killing him. I mean, it would have been a better movie.
That would have been awesome, yes.
Tarantino was the first, Reservoir Dogs was the first movie that after I watched it, I went and bought the soundtrack. I mean, that was a while ago, but I remember...
First movie I went and bought the soundtrack after seeing was La Bamba. But I also remember chasing down the Coneheads soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
No, I love... There's not a Tarantino movie that I don't love. Not even close. And, you know, this is up there. I mean, this is... I would... If we ever do a Tarantino show, it's going to be a bitch. Because I have a hard time choosing between this and Pulp Fiction.
Well, he's got to make 10 movies first.
Well, he's at, what, 7 now?
Yeah.
Something like that, and, you know, that's fine. We'll get there, because he's doing, after he's done with, whatchamacallit?
Django Unchained.
Is supposedly Kill Bill Volume 3, and I've read it in several interviews where he said as much.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. But I love Tarantino, and I think this is Tarantino at his best.
Cool.
I mean, it's a great movie, and I love it.
I love it too.
So very good. Why don't we do our rundowns and put a fork in this?
Sounds good to me.
All right, Heath.
Coming in at number 10 for me is Collateral. Number 9 is The Untouchables. Number 8 is Backdraft. Number 7 is Silence of the Lambs. Number 6 is Breakdown. Number 5, Toy Soldiers. Number 4, The Package. Number 3, Sneakers. Number 2, Memento. And number 1, Hunt for Red October.
Very good, Jeremy.
All right. Number 10, Identity.
That's
number
a good
9,
one.
Blown Away. Number 8, Primal Fear. Number 7, The Usual Suspects. 6, The Hitcher, 1986. 5, Cape Fear. 4, L.A. Confidential. 3, State of Grace. 2, Body Double. And number 1, 7.
Okay. And my number 10 is, you know, it's Pulp Fiction. You know, I've talked about that movie too much to put in the main body of my list, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that it's a great thriller. Then my number 9 would be Taken, the Oliver Megaton, Liam fucking Neeson movie. I love that movie. And then my number 8 was Collateral, Michael Mann. My number 7 is, you know, and to be fair, I just changed this a couple minutes ago, but it's the 1998 Christopher Nolan film Following. I kicked off a Hitchcock movie for it, since everyone else left him off their list. And then we into the list we just did. My number 6 was The Game. My number 5 was The Prestige. Number 4 was In the Line of Fire. My number 3 was Primal Fear. My number 2 was Jaws. My number 1 favorite was Inglourious Basterds. And stay tuned. We'll be right back with our outro section. And we are back. We just had a really fun discussion about thrillers. I had more fun with this list than I expected to. But
dare say it, we had a thrilling discussion on thrillers.
We had a thrilling discussion. Yeah, it's kind of a silly way of putting it, but we did. It's a good one. Great list. I'll probably be watching me some thrillers next. Get out of this Ethan movie kick I've been on lately. But I had fun doing this. You guys did too?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, great.
I always make a section now to write down ones that I'm unaware of. So it looks like I'm going to do Outlander, The Package, and In the Line of Fire.
Well, Outlander's not exactly a thriller.
Yeah,
but
no, but it's a good one.
Yeah, no, correct. That was the one.
No, the, Outlander's the it's oh, the, yeah, it's the Jesus movie Jesus versus Sword. Viking. No, the Hackman one was...
The Package.
Yeah, The Package.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have Inglourious Basterds. We'll see. I don't remember if I have it on DVD or Blu-ray, but I'll let you borrow it if you want. But so I guess that's going to bring it into the show for this week. Next week, hopefully, we'll successfully get sequels. Carol, and we have who do we have on that one? Jason Hunter and Chris Perrin.
Yep.
Jason Hunter and Chris Perrin. It should be a good one because we got down to what, number two, number three?
Yeah.
Before the system just fucking melted on us.
I'm gonna tool my list a bit. So
I am too. Should be good though. Should be really good. But until next time, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly. Get off my lawn. All right. Boom.
For no mere mortal can resist the evil. God.